We're also joined by Rodin Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning.
John, the General Assembly plans to stream more committee meetings this session and has added other new technology that House Speaker Gordon Fox calls a way of increasing government transparency and accountability. Is he right or not so much?
Yeah, he's right to a point. I distinguish between transparency and accessibility. With all this streaming, the building is much more accessible to people who can't happen to leave work at 4 o'clock on a weekday afternoon. But the transparency part, where decisions are made behind closed doors, I'm afraid all the video cameras in the world aren't going to solve that problem.
And you've also commented on how there's a real imbalance in terms of the kind of information available to legislative leaders and rank-and-file lawmakers who don't have their own staff members. How do you see the outlook on making any changes on that?
There are some green shoots, especially in the House, where we've seen this oversight committee. I think they have 3 staff members assigned to that committee in a way you don't see with other committees other than the finance committees. And so, you know, we're hoping that we can cultivate some of those green shoots here.
Let's go to Scott.
Just wondering, separation of powers, a big push by Common Cause years ago, and yet I don't think it's done very much to change government in Rhode Island. We look at things like the Curt Schilling fiasco. We see these last-minute deals that happen again and again. And as you pointed out, John, transparency as far as decision-making is still almost 18th century in a lot of ways on Smith Hill. So what we really accomplished with that?
Well, you know, there are 2 parts to that. One part absolutely is mission accomplished, which is legislators are no longer on these boards. So can you imagine if there are legislators on the State Investment Commission board or legislators still on the CRMC? It's almost hard to imagine because it's been 10 years since we've seen that. The other part is the more esoteric part about separation of powers. And I think what we haven't seen are the actors sort of play their roles out. I think we need governors to be a little more muscular in asserting their rights and authority and challenging the assembly a little more in some of these things.
Yeah, but how do you do that with a weak governorship system like we have without a line item veto, for instance?
Yeah, you'd use what you have. So, for instance, the State Properties Commission doesn't – Chafee left 2 members off. They could be his voice on there.
John, we're likely to see much more activity by super PACs in Rhode Island this election year due to the U.S. Supreme Court's Citizens United decision. What kind of impact do you expect from that?
This will be interesting because this is sort of our test run. A lot of states saw it 2 years ago, and then there were quite a bit of activity last year in the off-year elections we saw. You know, I'm not sure what to expect. By one account, Rhode Island's small and cheap, or unified media market. So some of these big outside national groups might say dropping 100,000 or even a million is a good investment here. On the other hand, you know, we're not a swing state. So we might not see as much of this as we would if we were the color purple.
Back in 2005, before you were with Common Cause, the group led an effort to try and create a more level playing field in terms of the kind of campaign finance available to lawmakers. It was a real uphill battle because the General Assembly is the one that has to approve this. Is that going anywhere or has that been dropped?
So, you know, we pulled out the bill from the Assembly and we don't plan to reintroduce it this year. But it's still on the agenda as something we'd like to see. The problem has been there have been other Supreme Court cases other than Citizens United, lower profile ones, that have undermined some of those systems in states like Arizona. And so we really have to rewrite that bill, which is going to take a couple of years.
Is there any way to bring more transparency to groups like Engage Rhode Island, for instance, in light of the Citizens United decision? Or is this just something we have to live with? It seems to me like in campaign finance, it's not what's illegal that's the problem. It's what's perfectly legal.
You know, there have been some innovations in states, New York in particular, I can think of, but other states where issue advocacy groups like Engage Rhode Island, which didn't get as much involved in campaigns but more lobbying, have had to disclose more. And so we need to look at those states, adopt best practices, the way policies sort of diffuse in all sorts of areas. But yeah, there are solutions to that problem.
We're talking here with the head of Common Cause of Rhode Island, John Marion. John, there's been an effort that hasn't gone anywhere in the legislature for a number of years to create a state office of inspector general. Advocates say that this would be a help to police behavior by the quasi-public agencies that sometimes run into scandal in Rhode Island. Is this a good idea? And if so, why hasn't it happened?
That's a great question. And I haven't spent a lot of time on it. I know Representative Valencia, for instance, has sponsored it over a number of years in the House. And I've seen his numbers he puts forward about in Massachusetts for every dollar invested in the IG, you get a multiple of that back. On paper, it seems like a good idea, but again, I haven't looked into it enough to speak really articulately.
If it makes a financial sense, why hasn't it gone anywhere?
That's a great question. Maybe it's because inspector generals, by their nature, are more independent than the way we audit currently.
What do you say to the criticism that the Common Cause is more concerned with good government than economic justice?
The interesting thing is you can link those two things. So as I said, Robert Reich, who is the big voice on income inequality, is also the chair of our national board. He links our sort of 1% campaign finance system to our 1% income inequality. We don't beat that drum here as much. We think there are groups like the Economic Progress Institute that are more credible on that. But we like to just stick to highlighting the problems with the campaign finance system more generally.
The state Senate has remained the main obstacle to restoring state ethics commission oversight of legislative behavior. I had a chance to ask Senate President Teresa Pivoweda whether we'll see any movement on the issue this year. Here's what she said.
Certainly, I anticipate that we will be discussing the post-separation of powers impact on the Ethics Commission, whether or not that embraces rulemaking authority or the constitutional makeup of that board, or whether that is an issue that's better discussed as part of a constitutional convention. I'm not certain at this time.
Your reaction, John?
You know, I've been around there for 4 years pushing this. Unfortunately, I haven't seen a lot of discussion. That's been one of the big problems, is the willingness to sort of come to the table.
Is this like a no conflict with my interest issue?
Probably the trickiest issue, because absolutely the only people affected by this directly are the 113 people who have to approve it.
And the House has approved it. The logjam seems to be in the Senate.
As far as we can tell, yes.
There tends to be an ideological split on the issue of term limits. Term limits are usually backed by conservatives and opposed by liberals, who say that the way to get people out of office is to hold elections. But is there any justification for term limits in Rhode Island, where we see the Democratic Party has such a strong hold on the legislature?
Our position as an organization is against term limits, but there is good evidence for term limits doing some good things and some bad things. In states like Michigan and California that have term limits, there are definitely a positive and negative. There is a middle ground, which is term limits on leadership positions and committee chairs and that sort of thing, that I think would be more likely to happen here and are worth looking at.
Are there any other changes in the Ethics Commission that you think are needed in this current session?
No, and the interesting thing about the Ethics Commission and what seems to worry the Senate president is that they don't have to wait on the General Assembly. They can make changes to the Code of Ethics themselves. And so there are a couple of issues that they need to take up. It came out, that they haven't put financial disclosure forms online like they did in the past. And there are some issues with the revolving door, which we saw with Commissioner Leach trying to go for the judgeship. So there's some technical issues that we need to see the Ethics Commission take up on their own.
Closed-door mediation is continuing in response to a lawsuit over the 2011 overhaul of the state pension system. Lawmakers are not a part of that process, although they will have to approve a settlement if it emerges for the settlement to become effective. What do you think of that process?
It's very curious. I've heard people say, and I can't confirm, that this is the first time a law has ever been mediated. And it's interesting that the lawmakers aren't a party to the mediation, is from everything that's been reported. So, it strikes me as probably a bad precedent, because what happens with the next law or the one after that? Can Superior Court judges essentially force the legislature's hand? I'm not sure that from a separation of powers standpoint, it's a good precedent.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Thank you.
And the executive director of Common Cause of Rhode Island, John Marion.
Thank you.